Support comes from the Rosa Parks Museum on Troy University's Montgomery campus. Located on the spot of Mrs. Parks' historic 1955 arrest and featuring exhibits that chronicle the history of the Montgomery bus boycott. More information at troy.edu/Rosa Parks.
From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Today we bring you part two of our interview with Dan T. Carter, author of the book Unmasking the Klansman, The Double Life of Asa and Forrest Carter. When Asa left Alabama for Texas, he became Forrest Carter, author of Western novels, the basis of the movie The Outlaw Josie Wales, starring Clint Eastwood. Dan T. Carter, no relation to Asa, joins us again by Skype from Brevard, North Carolina. Dan T. Carter, welcome back to Troy Public Radio by Skype.
Thank you, Carolyn.
You told us in part one of your interview that Asa Carter was the speechwriter for George Wallace's 1963 inauguration speech, when he said, "Segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever." Asa Carter was also a Klansman. Tell us why he left Alabama for Texas.
Well, I think by the end of the 1960s, George Wallace himself had begun to modify his, at least explicit racism, explicit language. And Asa Carter became disillusioned and said, really, the fight to maintain legal segregation is over. And as he told his lawyer, he said, "I'm through with that. I'm going to get rich." He says, "I'm going to be a writer." Well, how could this be? He certainly was a skilled writer, but you just don't start out at that age and suddenly become a successful writer, but he did. He moved to Texas. He got a millionaire oil friend who had supported Wallace to give him a background story that he supposedly was a Cherokee cowboy. And then he sent this self-published book called Gone to Texas to an agent of the William Morris Agency, and she miraculously read it, loved it, got a publisher lined up for him, sent it to Clint Eastwood. Eastwood loved it, and that became the famous Clint Eastwood film, The Outlaw Josie Wales, and that launched him then on his way as a writer nationally, because that was a best-selling book. And then he went on to publish two more novels, The Vengeance Trail of Josie Wales and Watch For Me on the Mountain, a very good fictional biography of Geronimo. And finally, just before his death in 1979, he published a book that purported to be his childhood as a Cherokee, a half-Cherokee child in the mountains of eastern Tennessee. It was all made up, of course, but it was published and initially just didn't take off at all. About 7,000 copies sold, and that was it. And then he died in 1979. But in 1988, his book agent, who had never lost faith in that book, had it reprinted by a small university press, University of Mexico Press. And between 1988 and 1991, it climbed from, they published 1,000 copies initially, it had sold 350,000 copies and reached number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
In his Texas life, he was known as Forrest Carter. The book you're talking about is The Education of Little Tree, and the big question is, did Forrest Carter, Asa Carter, have any Cherokee blood?
None. I mean, I've gone back through the census data for him and his mother, and as far back as to the year 1790, actually, census. And there's none whatsoever. He was interested in Cherokees and had obviously done a good bit of reading, I think, but there was no Cherokee blood whatsoever. And it was actually, Carolyn, it was one of the things that really got me going on him, because it wasn't that I objected so much to the book, The Educational Little Tree. It's fine. People like it. But I felt that, you know, the Indians have had a lot taken away from them. American Indians had their land taken. They were decimated by disease and by attacks when they tried to defend their homeland against the federal government. They lost. You had the Trail of Tears. And why should some white guy come along, steal their identity, and use it to sell books claiming to be a Native American? And so when I saw the book reach the number one place on New York Times publishing list, I decided to expose who he was. I had a hard time convincing the folks at the New York Times, but eventually I supplied them with enough material. They were convinced, and in October of 1991, I did an opinion piece for the New York Times.
Can you share what you wrote for the New York Times?
So in early October 1991, I published The Transformation of a Klansman, and I wrote, "Adolescent and adult readers have warmed to the uplifting story of how this well-known writer of Westerns came to know the wisdom of his Cherokee ancestors. In the wake of the success of Dances with Wolves, there was even talk of a Hollywood film. Unfortunately, the education of Little Tree is a hoax. The carefully constructed mask of Forrest Carter, Cherokee cowboy, self-taught writer, and spokesman for Native Americans, was simply the last fantasy of a man who reinvented himself again and again in the 30 years that preceded his death in 1979.
You went on to say, Dan, that he had engaged in cultural theft.
Really, I felt that by claiming Cherokee heritage, Asa Carter had engaged in cultural theft. He had expropriated, taken on the culture and identity of American Indians in order to sell books, and I found that objectionable.
You did a lot of research in the Anniston area and the connection there.
His father helped him get a farm in the late 50s, early 60s. He spent the rest of the next decade or more in Anniston. And what's intriguing to me is that very little of his violent activities took place in Anniston. One of the FBI agents I interviewed, who followed him very closely, said that Carter had told him he did not want to foul his own nest. He didn't want to do things that would reflect back on his children who were going to school, and eventually one of them went on to Jacksonville State. And so most of his violent activities actually took place in Birmingham.
Was he buried as Asa Carter or Forrest Carter?
He died in Abilene, Texas. As the ambulance driver said, we left Abilene and he was Forrest Carter, and he got to Atlanta, and then he was driven to Garmanville, a Methodist church where he was buried, and he was Forrest Carter still, because the family decided not to reveal who he really was. So he was buried as Forrest Carter. It was another decade before his wife finally had taken the marker away and put down a correct marker as Asa Carter.
Dan, finally, in your book, you make some parallels with today.
The main parallel is that Carter was part of a relatively large group of individuals really growing out of the pro-Nazi group of the 30s that embraced a kind of white Aryan Christian nationalism, that America is a Christian nation and a white nation. You may allow other groups as sufferers, but they shouldn't have any real role in society. And that didn't go very far in the 1950s. They were pretty much blocked out by mass media. But in today's world of social media and so on, I think there are many elements today we see in far-right groups which mirror exactly what Asa Carter and some of his friends were talking about in the 1950s.
Dan, I want to thank you for joining us today with a two-part interview about the life of Asa, alias Forrest Carter. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. It's good to talk with you.
Joining us by Skype was Dan T. Carter, author of the book Unmasking the Klansman, The Double Life of Asa and Forrest Carter. Thanks for joining us today for In Focus, which is now a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Carolyn Hutchison, and this is listener-supported Troy Public Radio.
Support comes from Sunshine Behavioral Medicine, providing specialized psychiatric treatments of traumatic brain injury, autism, and Asperger disorders to individuals in Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. More information at sunshine2000.com.